I wanted to finish what we started on Paragimel Pasuk Tes. Paragimel Pasuk Tes, Haman pays off Akashverosh. He offers to pay him off with 10,000 silver talents. I'm going to do a little math with you. There's a Tesis and a Sekhs Megillah.
We're continuing Pasuk Tes from last
time. Tois is on the Tzayin Amud Aleph. Says that Haman gave 10,000 silver talents. I'll read the Hebrew. Shamati, I heard, she'asara alof fi kikar kesef, 10,000 silver talents, oilin comes out, chatzi shekel l'chalakan mi'Yisrael. So half a shekel, a maksa shekel for each Jew. At what point in history? When they came out of Mitzrayim, there were 600,000 Jews. And that's always the number that's referred to as the core of Klal Yisrael. The core of Klal Yisrael is 600,000 Jews. All of Judaism, all the Jews in Judaism could be divided into 600,000. There's 600,000 tasks that are incumbent on the Jewish people. And when they went out of Mitzrayim, so each person had one task. You know, when he said task, I mean the Mahalach HaChaim. That with his life, he's supposed to accomplish something. And there were 600,000 facets of this beautiful diamond called Klal Yisrael. And now that we have much more than 600,000 Jews, Ken Yirbu, Baruch Hashem, so then people don't have complete tasks. You know, you share tasks. It's called, multitasking. That's the opposite of multitasking. Yeah. I'm sorry. That's what happens. So it's a half a shekel for each one of the core 600,000 members of Klal Yisrael left Mitzrayim, which gives you 300,000 shekel. 300,000 shekel equals 10,000 silver talents. So Haman did that. Why did he do that? Because he was told Akashverosh, you see from the Torah, the Jew's Torah, that the amount that a Jew is worth is a half a shekel. They gave a half a shekel to redeem themselves. There's a pigeon. Each Jew was required to give a half a shekel to the Mishkan, and that's in place of giving himself to the Mishkan, giving money in place of yourself. So you see that the life of a Jew is worth a half a shekel. Haman's buying the Jews off Akashverosh, so he gives him 300,000 shekel, which is 10,000 silver talents, and that way he's buying them off Akashverosh. That's the price of a Jew. There's a problem with this Tosis that the Mefarshim ask. The Megillah Starim asks this kasha. I don't have an answer. The Pasuk in Shmais tells us the representative values of a shekel and a kikar. This is in Shmais.
What tells us what?
This is in Shmais Perek Lamed Ches. It's in Parshas Pekudei. Appropriately in Parshas Pekudei. They counted up all the donations for the basin for the Mishkan, and the pasuk says in Perek Lamed Ches, pasuk of Hey, v'chesa pikudei eda, and the money of the accounting of the congregation, me'as kikar is 100 kikar. So you know it amounted to 100 kikar, which is 10 times the amount that Haman was giving for the Jews. Ve'elu v'shmavei as chamisha v'shivim, 1,775 shekel b'shekel akedish. So we're going to use the round number just here. It's 100 kikar is 1,775 shekel.
What?
I just totally missed that. 100 kikar is 1,775 shekel. That's what it says.
1775 silver talents.
silver talents.
So that's 1775 silver talents? That's
not shekels per...
Shekels. 1775 shekels. That was a change. That's how much they collected.
Wait.
Okay?
It says they had 100,000 kikar kesef?
No, they had 100 kikars and 1,775 shekel.
Per... In total?
In total.
But if there were 600,000 people, shouldn't they have had 300,000 shekels?
Well, they had 100 kikar and 1,775 shekels. The skullim in the kikar. The kikar contained all the skullim.
Each kikar was 1,775 shekel.
Well, if
is that what it means?
I'm going to use rounded numbers, okay? It's just easier.
But
100 kikar is 300,000 shekel. How about that?
Oh, so one kikar is 1775.
No, you're making a mistake. The total was 100 kikar plus change.
Oh, plus that amount.
1,775.
Oh,
I'm not going to deal with the change. It doesn't really matter for... It doesn't really matter enough.
So 100 kikar plus the 1775 is 300,000 shekels.
Right.
Oh.
So that's approximately, 100 kikar is 300,000 shekels, so each kikar is 3,000 shekel. Each kikar is 3,000 shekel. Because they had 601,775 they had about 600,000. They had about 600,000 half shekels, which is 300,000 whole shekels, which equals 100 kikar. Take off the zeros. So each kikar is 3,000 shekel. All right. Say it.
Okay.
So far, so good.
Each kikar 3,000 shekel.
And here it says they had
about 10,000 kikars.
That's a lot.
Wait a second. 10,000 kikars or 100 kikars?
No, Haman gave 10,000 kikars. What's 10,000 times 3,000? It's like 30 million, right?
No, 3 million.
10,000 times 3,000?
Should be 3 million.
10,000 times 3,000.
300,000.
That's what I said. That's what I said.
10,000 times
3,000? Times 3,000. 30 million.
No, 300,000.
No, 10,000 kikars.
Right.
And it's 3,000 shekel in a kikar.
That's true, sorry.
That's 30 million.
Maybe he was giving the money that...
Haman gave 30 million shekelim.
Maybe he was giving enough money that 600,000 Jews would have paid in taxes over some number of years.
Maybe.
Hmm?
But we still have this discrepancy because in the Midbar, the Jews gave 300,000 shekel.
Right.
And Haman bought the Jews for 30 million shekel. So there's a problem because Taisus says, Shamati, I heard. Taisus, I heard that he gave a half a shekel for each one. Which would not give you a Saras Alafim Kikar Kesef. It wouldn't give you 10,000 talents.
Mm-hmm.
It would give you 1,000. Maybe 1,000.
Like, no, 100.
100 talents. Okay, so that means the Haman gave 50 shekel for each Jew, not a half a shekel for each Jew.
Inflation.
I said it could be. It's still Lashon HaTaisus is a mashma like that. Lashon HaTaisus is he gave half a shekel. So you know that. So according to Taisus, he gave 300,000 shekel, and according to the Megillah Starim, he gave 30 million shekel. 50 shekel for each Jew. Now, when we finish the math, we can discuss this. I just want to get the Cheshbonos, just for information. The Paiskim say a shekel is about 8 ounces of silver. That's kind of the consensus of the Paiskim. A shekel is about 8 ounces of silver. If there's 3,000 shekel in a kikar, so 3,000 shekels in a kikar, and each shekel is 8 ounces, so 3,000 times 8 ounces is 24,000 ounces.
Okay.
So in each kikar was 24,000 ounces of silver. So far, so good. Now he gave 10,000.
3,000 times 8 ounces.
It's 24,000 ounces for each kikar. The amount of silver in a kikar is 24,000 ounces because it's 3,000 shekels and each shekel is 8 ounces. He gave 10,000 kikars. So if one kikar is 24,000 ounces, 10,000 kikars is 240 million ounces.
That's a lot.
That's 7,500 tons of silver.
So 10 times 24,000.
10,000 times 24,000.
Is what again?
240 million ounces.
That's like a battleship made out of silver.
Which is 7,500 tons of silver.
Not really.
240 million
ounces.
So,
and that's 75. What? How many tons?
No, then you divide that by whatever. You have to put it into pounds. 16 ounces in a pound, and then there's 2,000 pounds in a ton. And you get 7,500 tons. And Haman gave this to kill the Jews. Haman gave this to kill the Jews.
He's a wealthy guy.
Well, could you say the math for the last thing one more time? It was, how did it work out? Yeah, whatever. I'll listen to the tape.
Wow. Seven. You know what that is?
It's a lot of silver. Now, Chazal say that Haman, you know, this, HaKadosh Baruch Hu rewards or blesses Mesiras Nefesh. Mesiras Nefesh works even for people that are trying to do something evil. This is a well-known yisoy that there's a balance in creation. That if people are only matzliach, if they're Mesiras Nefesh for good things, and when they're Mesiras Nefesh for bad things, they flop on their face. So then people will not have much of a challenge in life. See somebody, mommy's being raised in efforts to raise money to build a yeshiva or to raise money for a poor family, and then he has tremendous hatzlacha min hashamayim because he's raising money. And then when they try and raise money for the church, no one gives them. That, you know, it tilts the scales. It tilts the scales, you know, towards the side of avodas Hashem. Hashem always wants a balance. Kadosh Baruch Hu, he has certain forces that he created, and one of them is Mesiras Nefesh. That means if you give up your life for something, or you dedicate your life, that you give it your all, and you're willing to pay for it. You're willing to give up what's most precious to you, so then you're blessed with Hatzlacha. That's the way the world is engineered by Kadosh Baruch Hu.
Who's saying this?
This is Pasha. Rabbi Yosef Leib Bloch talks about it in the Sefer Shirei Das, but he's not the only one that says that this is something which is a yisayid, that in order to preserve Bechira, then the Keichas Hara have to have the same access as to the Keichas and the Bria as the Keichas HaTayv. It's got to be. If there's Nevuah, then there has to be a Taiva for Avodah Zarah. If there's a Beis HaMikdash, there has to be, you know, Kishuv. There's a balance. The minute the Taiva for Avodah Zarah disappears, Nevuah disappears.
When Mashiach comes, is that going to disappear?
Is what going to disappear? It's not going to be any Ra. Okay. Yes.
There's not going to be
any Ra. There's no point for Bechira once Mashiach comes. We've made it.
We're not going to have Yetzer Hara, right?
Right. There's no need for Bechira. There's only need for Bechira if you're making choices. Once you have only one choice, then there's no point. At that point, the road gets so narrow, you have no place to go.
That'd be awesome.
Well, the reason why Nebuchadnezzar left is only because the Rabban got rid of...
the Taiva for Avodah Zarah.
Right?
Yes. That's the reason why. They're the ones that did it. So Haman, by giving 7,500 tons of silver, is buying the Jewish people. That hurt. You know, it hurt him in the pocket. He is willing to give up that which is most precious to him. What is more precious to a Russian than his money? So much money. He's giving up so much money because this money to him is worthless if the Jewish people are around. That's Mesiras Nefesh. There's nothing precious. There's nothing more precious and dear to him than to kill the Jewish people. And Chazal say he would be Metzliach. Rishayim in this world, in general, Rishayim in this world are Metzliach. When they want to kill Jews, they kill Jews. They're Metzliach. The fact that we're still around is an open miracle. But you know, they win, we lose. That's why Chanukah was such a miracle. You know, Rabban b'ad matim, Tmeim b'ad tarim, Zaydim b'ad ishka tarasecha. It was a miracle that Tahirim beat the Tmeim. It was a miracle that ishka tarasecha beat the Rishayim. Why is it a miracle? Because in this world, it just doesn't go like that. It's their world. It's like, you know, you play baseball on the home turf. The home team is favored to win. You know, it's their field. They're used to playing it. They have the fans. They've got they've got everything. Olam Hazeh is their turf. They win, we lose. The only way to beat the Kayach HaRa in this world is to reach out for help. You can't do it on your own. So Haman was going to win. So why didn't he win? Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu knew in the future that Haman's going to do this. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu prepared the refuah, the antidote, before the makkah, before the disease. And he told the Jews in the desert that they should give up what's precious to them. Half a shekel for each person, equaling 600,000 half shekels, to preempt Haman's wicked designs. It was a preemptive strike. The Bnei Yisrael, Hashem said, Haman, you're not the only one with Mesiras Nefesh. The Jews also had Mesiras Nefesh. They put their lives into the Mishkan. They gave what was precious to them. It didn't matter how little money a person had, they had to give it. Nobody was excused. They gave something precious in the Midbar, and they gave it with a full heart. It doesn't even have to be so much money. It's the way you give it. They gave it with Mesiras Nefesh.
Yeah, but the rich people didn't have Mesiras Nefesh.
Well, if the rich people are saying, I want to give you my blood from my veins, I want to give you everything, but this is all I'm allowed to give,
right,
that's also Mesiras Nefesh. That is Mesiras Nefesh. That Machash Beresh didn't take Haman's money either, by the way. So Haman didn't lose a penny from this. Just the very fact that he's willing to give it is Mesiras Nefesh. Whether he gives it or not is Mesiras Nefesh. And the Jews, their Mesiras Nefesh was real. So Haman, got beat. He got beat to the punch. They got him. They got him good. Right, that's what it says in the Gemara Megillah, Daf Zayin. Let's go on to Pasuk Yud, Baisai. Vayasar HaMelech is Tabatai. This is the scariest pasuk in the Torah. Very scary. The king removed his ring, Me'al Yodai, from his hand, Vayitn al Haman, and he gave it over to Haman, Ben Hamdasa, the son of Hamdasa, Agag, he is a descendant of Agag, Tzair HaYehudim, he is the oppressor of the Jews. So there's a number of things in this pasuk which need to be explained. You know, we know where Haman came from. It's said it before already. Haman ben Hamdasa, we know who his father was, we know who his grandfather was.
And we know he's an enemy of the Jews.
We know he's an enemy of the Jews.
When did this happen? Oh.
There we go. So why does he have to say it?
What did this ring represent? You also had that with Yosef.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, well, the ring represented the power in the kingdom.
They didn't wear a crown?
They wore a crown.
The royal seal.
But the ring, because that's the Pashup Shant. The ring was the signet ring. And that enables you to be a lawgiver. And the one who has the power to issue edicts and laws is the true power in the kingdom.
It's like the conch.
So what's
like the conch.
Why would Achashverosh so freely give away this? Like,
That is a beautiful question. That question is so beautiful, we're going to talk about it right now. Reb Shlomo Akabitz, in his commentary, Menais HaLevi, asked the very same question. He said, in Yiddish you say, Medav Zay Meshigeh. A king, he's got the ring, he's got the power. He's finally attained power. And he's going to let that power out of his hand, he's going to transfer that to someone that they could be the masters of that power and be independent of Achashverosh? Even Paro didn't do that. Paro told Yosef that you're going to be the second in command, but I'm the king. And Achashverosh gave his ring over to Haman, and Haman can make laws that Achashverosh can't repeal. Because when they asked Achashverosh to repeal the law later on, Achashverosh says, I can't. Persian law does not allow the king to repeal laws that were issued with his signet ring. If he issued a law without a signet ring, So that could be repealed. You can make an amendment or something. I don't know. Congressional Congress. But if it's with the signet ring, it can't be repealed. It can't be brought back. So he's given Haman the power to make laws independent of him that are irreversible. You have to be crazy. And Shlomo HaKabbas lets us in on a very well-known secret. Very well-known secret. He said the Goyim hate the Jews. And hatred does something to a person. It corrupts him. And it makes him illogical. When a person is filled with hatred, the only thing he sees is hatred. All other kashbainis, all other calculations are null and void. Lashon HaChazal is sina mekalkelis es ashura. Hatred erodes the straight and narrow path. You have a certain trodden path which people go along, it makes sense, there's a mahalach. And sinner makes you go off the beaten track. It makes you do crazy things. You think Ahasuerus was this besotted king who was very naive and just dumb and stupid. I don't know. And you know, he was swayed this way and that way. Ahasuerus was a Russian. Ahasuerus hated the Jews. Ahasuerus hated them at least as much as Haman, if not more. And with that, the Reb Shlomo HaKabbas explains the pasuk. It says he removed the ring from his finger and he gave it to Haman. Why would he do such an insane thing? Because he was Ben Hamdasa. Hagagi Tzerayudim. The reason why his lineage is repeated here is because here it's providing the reason why Ahasuerus gave it to him. Ahasuerus saw a perfect opportunity. He hates the Jews. Haman hates the Jews. Haman is from a long line of Jew haters. He's got a Messiah. He'll give the ring to Haman, and they will take care of the Jewish problem. So that explains the Hamshach HaPesukim. That's one thing the Mepharshim say in this pasuk.
Why couldn't he do it himself?
What?
Why couldn't he do it himself?
It's pashut that a king has to be responsible. If a king doesn't act in a responsible manner, he loses the kingdom. He can't be directly implicated in this at all. But Haman, on the other hand, could do what he wants.
Yeah, but at the same time, it would have the seal of the king on it.
Wait, it'll tell you. It will tell you. There's a Gemara Megillah on this. I tell you, it's a very scary pasuk. The Gemara Megillah is in Daf Yud Gimel and Aleph. Rabbi Abba Bar Kahana says, the Klal Yisrael had 48 prophets, male prophets, 48 male prophets, 7 female prophets from the time of prophecy until the time of Mordechai and Esther. Mordechai was the last of the prophets. 48 male prophets, 7 female prophets, and they were all, to a certain degree, ineffective in getting the Jews to do tshuva, and getting the Jews to see where they're heading, and where they should be heading. Rababas Barkana says, Gedoyla Hasaras Tabas, the effects of the removal of the ring was greater. Gedoyla Hasaras Tabas Zu, Yaisem Imemchas Neviim, Vizayan Neviyais, Shisnavalam Yisrael. One little ring had more of an effect on Klal Yisrael than 48 male prophets and 7 female prophets. Shekulam Layakzirin Lamutav. All the prophets were ineffective in returning Klal Yisrael back to the straight and narrow. Ve'ilu Asaras Tabas, the removal of the ring, Hatzir Lamutav, brought them back.
Moshe Rabbeinu didn't bring the Jews back.
Back.
Chata Ego, Chata Meraglim, Kairich. I'm not sure what you mean.
Well, as with the Chedegel, didn't he bring them back?
Yeah, but it wasn't a complete return. You know, they kept. You know,
this is going to stay complete.
The tshuva of the Bnei Yisrael in the time of Purim is in parallel to the level that they were at Har Sinai before the Chedegel.
Really?
And that level they were never on. the last time they were on was before the Chedegel, and then there was a nice, like 800 year break. Almost 900 year break, and then they went back to the Madrega again. There were ups and downs, there's always ups and downs, but the Madrega that they were on, that all the Klal Yisrael was together, and they were in harmony with God and with each other in perfect harmony, that was not.
That was here?
That was not there. And Haman did it. Who did it? Haman did it. Haman did it.
Is that why he was zechut to grandchildren that would be totally difficult?
Who knows? But because he was a Sibur de Tshuva, the grandchildren of Haman learned Torah in Bnei Brak, in Maran Sanhedrin.
And that even happened?
You know, it's sort of hard to make that correlation, because his kavana was to kill him.
Someone who accidentally drops the
question. I would say a different mahalach than that. I mean, he's trying to kill them, so because he tries to kill them, so they do tshuva, that's why he doesn't get discussed to that. You only get discussed for something if that's what you were doing.
If you drop a coin accidentally, maybe just the
opposite. It's only about stalker.
Maybe it's a punishment.
It's a special thing
about
stalker, because the Ikabait stalker is the only has what to eat. If by mitzvah, you know, by Goyim, you say Machshava Kamaisa. The Klal Machshava Kamaisa by Goyim, you say Machshava Kamaisa. It means Haman is Nechshav, like I would say. Yeah.
Maybe you get, sorry for interrupting you, but maybe you could say that it's even a punishment for him. He hated the Jews so much. So now.
Yeah, no, he's turning over in his grave.
Yeah, right? My grandkids.
No, the pashut is that when you know, in order to hate something so much, you can't hate something unless you know it very well and very deep. Otherwise, you don't really hate it, because if you know more about it, you'd hate it even more.
That's why I feel
so, you hate something or someone, chas v'shalom, that you don't know enough about, so then that hatred is very shallow. Haman's understanding in the goddess of Klal Yisrael matched his hatred. That's more than a half.
Right.
Bnei Banav, his descendants. Don't tell him Bnei
Banav.
Yeah, that means it was the Amkus and the goddess of Klal Yisrael. I mean, Haman wants to destroy Klal Yisrael because they're a threat.
How are we saying that that's because he knew so much about Klal Yisrael? Because he knew so much.
Malik is standing exactly where Klal Yisrael is. Everything has a parallel in this world, right?
So
Klal Yisrael's parallel is Amalek.
So learning Torah in Bnei Brak is not a good thing. It's not saying that. I thought it was that they became Ger.
Yeah, it's a great thing. It is a great thing. He was just asking where that come from. He wanted to know if maybe it came from Bishchus that Haman was the biggest Machzor Baalei Teshuva in history.
Yeah.
I mean, it's definitely related, but it's more because of the haracha, the appreciation and understanding, the deep appreciation and understanding of what the Jews are, and that's why they're a threat to him. If you want to be totally evil, so then the Jews are in your way. No, this is, it happens, you know, there's a famous Israeli politician that I don't think she's ever stopped blaspheming the Torah community for a moment since she started learning how to speak. She breathes it. And she has a son, it's a Ben Torah. I don't know exactly, you know, how he became a Ben Torah. It's just, it's not hard to imagine that when you have a mother that does it all the time, you figure there must be something to this, otherwise why is she bashing it so much? And then when you find out that it's nothing like what she says, then you just fall.
I'd love to see those family reunions.
Not pretty. Let's go on to Pasuk Yud-Aleph. Vayemer HaMelech LaHaman, the king said to Haman. Now, there's no explicit mention that this is the Jewish people. And we said there seems to be a difference of opinion in the Mepharshim, whether Achashverosh also knew who it was. But there's nothing explicit. Vayemer HaMelech LaHaman, a kesef nasalach, the money is given to you, va'am, and the nation, la'sais boy, to do with it, katoy be'enecha, like what's good in your eyes. So the Jews were just sold down the river. Gewalt. Gewalt. The Gemara Megillah is a mashal. There were two people. They had fields side by side. And one guy had a big problem. He had this, you see, he had this ditch. He had a ditch in his field. You know, the cows kept breaking their legs in the ditch. Not good to have a ditch. But he didn't have any dirt to fill up the ditch. And his neighbor had a problem, too. He had a field. And he had this mound of dirt. And he kept, you know, chipping over it. It was blocking his view. And he couldn't, you know, he couldn't afford to hire someone to take it away. And they're both in the local bar or something, I don't know, meeting place. And they're talking. And one guy said, oh, man, do I got Cyrus? I've got this ditch. And the other one says, oh, boy, do I got, do you think you got Cyrus? I've got a mound of dirt. And then all of a sudden a light bulb appears over the head. He says, hey, why don't you move your dirt into my ditch? And then we'll both be happy. I won't have a ditch and you won't have the mountain. The Gemara says, that's Achashverosh and Haman. Achashverosh had a mound that he wanted to get rid of, an unsightly mound, and Haman had a ditch. It's called a grave. Achashverosh wouldn't take money. I'm going to take money? Would the owner of the ditch take money from the owner of the mound? Would the owner of the mound take money from the owner? Would you know?
That's good money too. I'll take it.
No, it's just not right. You are giving me exactly what I need. I have a Jewish people. I don't know what to do with them. I can't stand them. And you are providing me with a solution for my problem. I've been looking around for a hole big enough for them for ages, and now you happen to have a hole. A mason caver, mass grave. I'm gonna take money for that. I'm not letting you buy my dirt. Let you buy my dirt? I've been trying to get rid of it. That's the Gemara's pshat. There's no mispshat on why he didn't take it. I mean, there's no mispshat on the surface why he didn't take it. Another pshat is one before Hashem. Then the Maharal says, like we said before, there's certain propriety that has to be kept up. A king can't sell people down the river, even if it's the Jews. It doesn't matter. He's still a king. He's the king of the Jews. He is their king. It doesn't matter how much he finds them intolerable. He is their king. And you hold them intolerable, it's a matter of principle, and you have to kill them? Okay. It's not okay, but that's, you know, Midini Amalchus. To disrupt the Malchus, but to sell them? A Malchus can't do that. A Malchus that does that is not a Malchus. It's a steer. It's a contradiction to be honest. He can't do it. So he couldn't take the money. But the Maharal says an interesting point. He wanted to take the money. Achashverosh was a Baltaiva. Remember the Persians?
Mm-hmm.
A Baltaiva. They can't control their passions. He had to get his hands on the money. He couldn't keep it, but he had to get his mamish amazing this Maharal. So he asked Haman, he said, I'll take the money, but I'll give it back to you. Why does he have to take it? Because I want to count it. I want to touch it. I want to feel like it's mine. Just for a little bit of time. I want to touch this. This 7,500 tons of silver. I want to see it. I want to swim in it. You know, you took a bath in it. But he couldn't keep it. So that's how Achashverosh reconciled this. That's the morale. The Reb Shlomo Alkovitz explains, it's Lishitasei. It's his commentary in the previous pasuk. Achashverosh hated the Jews. Achashverosh wanted them dead. And Achashverosh realized it's going to cost money to kill them. I mean, you have to print up flyers and advertise and buy weapons. And there's all kinds of expenses in killing our people. Pay the grave diggers. It's going to cost money. And he's afraid if Haman doesn't have enough money, so then he won't be so exuberant about it. They'll do a half job. And that Achashverosh was, you know, was intolerable. He could. So Achashverosh says, I appreciate it. You bought the Jews. I got it. It's a sale. But now I'm about to make a donation to the cause. And my donation to the cause is to give this money. And the real reason, and these reasons are reasons on the surface. They barely scratch the surface. And they're true. It's just like they're covering over the another reason. Look, some safer says a reason. He said, when there's a decree against the Jews, this is something which has happened before. It's Nebuchadnezzar, Litzarena happened before. We hope it doesn't happen again. But the Jews have a formula of dealing with it. One is to try and see who they know in the palace. So they were knocked down this time, because even though Esther was there, they didn't know she was Jewish. So Hashem took that hope away from them. What's the next thing you try and do? Shmir. And all these things are not good for the Jewish people, because right now they have to be in a situation where they have no hope. There's only one thing they could do, is tshuva. There's no hope, there's no ishtalos, they could do nothing. Fast, daven, learn. That's it. Hashem doesn't want them to take a step in any direction. If the Jews hear that Ahasuerus turned down 7,500 tons of silver, and he was offered that amount of money, and he turned it down, so I don't think that they could offer Ahasuerus much to induce him to take it back. So some sefer said it worked out, min ha-shamayim. For whatever reason, Ahasuerus shouldn't take it. And that's also a nes, with all the explanations. It's a nes that Ahasuerus didn't take the money. If we know anything about Ahasuerus, it's one thing he wanted was money. He wanted everything. And he turned it down. And we have reasons why, but it's still a nes. And the nes is because if he would have taken the money, then Jews would say, okay, we'll offer more. We'll offer more than one Haman, you know.
Jews had money?
When there's a decree over your head that every single man, woman, and child is going to die, you come up with the money. You go to the World Bank and you borrow it at high interest rates. You get it. That's like some cipher. There's some Ramazim on this pasuk. Rokeach.
Who?
Rokeach. It's a commentary written by Rebbe Elazar Rokeach of Germiza. He's a Rishon. And his commentary is like the Baal Turim's commentary on Chumash. It's filled with Ramazim and Gematrius. And we're going to quote from him frequently in the coming Pesukim, because what he does with Pesukim is it's a Kiddush Shem Shemayim, what he does. Ahasuerus told Haman, HaKesef Nasan Lach. This is the Rokeach. HaKesef Nasan Lach. The money is given to you, Haman. So who's going to get the money? Haman. The Rokeach says Ahasuerus was uttering a prophecy without even realizing it, because the gematria of HaKesef is 165. Fein Chav is 100, Samach is 60, He is 5, it's easy to gematria, 165.
What is Kesef or
Ha-Kesef? Ha-Kesef. He is 5, Chav is 20. That's 25 plus 60, that's 85. And Fein?
Total is how much?
He is 5, together. He is 5, Chav is 20, 25. Wait. Samach? Is 60. It's 85 plus 80. 85 and 80 is 165. So it's the same gematria as ha-eitz. Ha-eitz. He is 5, I is 70, tzadik, so first is 90. 90, 70 and 5, 165. Ahasuerus, Hashem put these words in his, Hashem caused Ahasuerus to express the refusal of the money with the word ha-kesef. Because it's already coming down into this world. Hashem's word is already descending into this world. That Haman, you think you're getting money? No, ha'etz nasan lach. Substitute the word ha'etz instead of ha'kesef. Ha'etz nasan lach. You think you're buying the Jewish people? It's not even costing you anything because you're getting your money back. No, you're gonna hang. Ha'etz nasan lach means you're gonna hang. And Ahasuerus is saying it. And Ahasuerus is the one that said it. When it actually happened. Flew all up.
I wonder if he ever realized that.
Yeah, you think it went through his mind that...
No,
you have to ask him.
Not at the time, probably.
So this is what it means by Hamelach.
Most people, also, when they talk, don't think of what...
Nasan Lach means it's given to you. What is Nasan Lach? It's given to you. Lach means you. Lach also has a gematria. Laman is 30, Chaf is 20. 30 and 20 is 50. How high was the gallows?
50 feet.
50 amas. Hakesef, the gallows, Nasun is going to be given Lach 50 amas. And he says the word Nasun, given,
wow,
has two nuns, one in the beginning, one in the end. Both of those are 50. So that's a remus to the gals, which is 50 amas.
That's nuts.
And there's a tav vav in the middle, which spells the word tav. Tav vav, tav, which means a long vertical line. So the word Nasun, the first letter is nun, which represents 50 amas. The last letter is nun, which represents 50 amas. The tav and the vav in the middle represents the word tav, which is this, which is a vertical line, which is a gallus.
Tav?
Tav, yeah. Tav is a vertical line.
How does this work out, Nasun?
Nasun. Nun, Saf, Vav, Nun. Nun is 50? 50 amas. Tav, Vav spells the word Tav, which is a vertical line, and Nun at the end. So it's a line. It's like a line. Like an upright line. Looks like a gallows.
Wait a second. The Tav Vav Nun looks like an L?
No, Tav.
That's a word. There's a word in Lashon Kodesh, Tav Vav.
That means a vertical line. I guess. I think it's Tav Mincha.
Okay, Brisa.
And I stopped them.